Today on Straight Talk Africa, the significance of gender equality in Africa. That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Sheka Sali, and today it's a discussion on the significance of gender equality in Africa. Friday is International Women's Day. This year's theme is investment in women and girls for inclusive green growth. As women celebrate this day, most African women still face major challenges to reach gender equality. My colleague, Paul Ndiho, has more.
Investing in women's economic empowerment across the globe is setting a direct path towards gender equality, poverty eradication, and inclusive economic growth. In February this year, U.S. President Donald Trump signed the Women's Global Development and Prosperity Initiative that focused on advancing female participation in the global economy.
We're here today to launch the first ever U.S. government-wide initiative focused on economic empowerment for women in developing countries.
The initiative will look to improve women's access to quality education and skills training, support female entrepreneurship, and reduce barriers to women's participation in the global workforce in the developing world. Across Africa, women are slowly breaking into the historically male-dominated domain of becoming elected officials, business owners, and technopreneurs. For decades, women have been calling for equality, and today they are making their mark. For example, the tech industry has provided unprecedented opportunities for women. Even though trends indicate a growing gender-digital divide and underrepresentation in the fields of science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and design.
Promoting the participation of women and girls in science means changing mindsets, fighting gender stereotypes and biases that limit girls' passions, expectations, and professional goals since their early childhood.
Across the region, women are also raising the bar and igniting dialogue as they strive to reach the top of the ladder in their tech industry. Tazoka Charai, a co-founder of Impact Hub Harare, says women in the tech sector are shaping the future despite repeated hardship.
The women in technology who use our space focus on breaking that glass ceiling by creating products that are world class. They are here to show that girls are just as competent as men. They are here to not only do that, but to also build products and services that help their communities.
In politics, women are shaking the pillars of government patriarchy, and they are putting their government establishments on notice. They are now a political force to be reckoned with. For example, in October 2018, the Ethiopian Parliament approved Sahel Wagzawadi as the country's first female president. While the president's post is a ceremonial one, her appointment marks another shift in Ethiopia's political system. President Joyce Banda is running again for the top seat after reversing her decision to join an alliance with the opposition led by former vice president. Her announcement could be a game changer. Women activists are also making their voices heard. For example, in Nigeria, thousands of women from across the country marched for a violence-free election ahead of the country's presidential election.
Time has gone when they thought that women didn't have a say. Women should be seen and not heard. Our voices cannot be subdued.
Violence against women and girls is still rampant across the continent. It negatively affects women's general well-being and prevents women from fully participating in society. Analysts say that perhaps game-changing startups, social entrepreneurs, gender equality activists, and women innovators may have found the right mechanism in which innovation can remove barriers and accelerate progress for gender equality and build an unshakable foundation that meets the needs of women and girls. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. And joining me in the studio today are two distinguished guests. Joanna LeBlanc, National Security and Foreign Affairs Legal Strategist, and my colleague, Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, VOA reporter and co-host of the popular Our Voices program, VOA's Pan-African talk show. Well, I have to say, ladies, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka.
Thank you, Shaka. It's definitely an honor and privilege to be here. In fact, I've been wanting to be a part of this show for quite some time now. So one of my dreams have come true today. So thank you for the privilege and honor of being here today. I appreciate it.
Are you saying this from the deepest bitter part of the bottom of your Haitian heart and soul?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I listen to your show every Wednesday on the podcast because that's how I stay abreast with what's happening on the continent politically, socially, and economically. So thank you for the work that you do in terms of being the voice of so many throughout the continent.
Profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled for your compliments and support.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You're most welcome.
Shaka, thank you for having me. You know, I was thinking, you said our show is popular, but your show is popular. So that's why I'm on here to talk about our show on your very popular show. So it's a great honor for me to be here as well.
Well, it is equally an honor, of course, to have the opportunity to host a co-host yes. of another VOA popular show.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Let me come to you immediately. We're celebrating Women's Day Friday. What does it mean to you, really?
The significance of us celebrating Women's Day on Friday means a great deal to me. And in fact, I don't think that women should be celebrated one day out of the year. I think women should be celebrated every day, right? Because women are the backbones of many families throughout the continent of Africa and across the world. So for me, as it pertains to the holiday itself, I think that we need to take some time to reflect on some of our policies and laws that have impeded with the development of women all across the continent. So hopefully today we'll get to speak on some of the issues impacting women throughout the continent and perhaps even all across the world.
Talking about laws, you happen to be a lawyer by training.
Mm-hmm.
How was it like to be in a law school class? Because the last time I checked, there are some females who have actually run into problems while attending law school. And one of them happens to be Elizabeth Dole.
Mm-hmm.
When she was at Harvard Law School, mm-hmm. she said she had a male neighbor
mm-hmm.
who actually told her the courage and the dubious privilege to tell her, or the audacity for that matter to tell her, that she was in fact occupying someone else's spot. She was not expected to be in that law class.
Yeah, so...
Did you run into those types of problems when you were in law school?
Well, what I can tell you is, as a law student, I went to a law school here in the United States where I earned my Doctor of Jurisprudence at Indiana University, Robert H. McKinney School of Law.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. That was in 2016. Now, there weren't that many women of color in my class. In fact, I can count on maybe two hands or maybe one hand how many women of color were in the program. And then I went on to GW and pursued an LLM in National Security and U.S. Foreign Relations.
LLM meaning?
A Master of Laws in National Security, where in my program there were two black women. It was myself and a young woman, Radiate Johannes, from Ethiopia, who was one of the smartest women I've ever met in my life. Who are the only two black girls in the program. So as we talk about women and access, if we're going to look at it in the U.S., you also have to add another layer to that conversation, which is race. Race plays a huge role on access to various opportunities in the United States. So as a woman who takes pride in my work and in the fact that I consider myself to be somewhat knowledgeable on the issues of national security, intelligence, and foreign affairs, oftentimes those spaces are not occupied by women. They are occupied by men. They're dominated by men. And sometimes you have to prove that you belong there, right? And oftentimes it's you know, your opinions are not really validated until a man says it. And you have to work 10 times harder to show that, yes, you are valuable, and yes, you are intelligent, and that you belong at the table.
So when you talk about race, are you saying here that when you are a black woman, you face a sort of double jeopardy?
Absolutely, Shaka, absolutely. You know, being a person of color in America means something. And another layer, an immigrant, right? Immigrant, black, in a woman, right?
Wow.
So you have to work 10, 20 times harder than your counterparts to prove yourself, right? But the issues impacting women, I think, generally are the same, whether you are in Africa, in the Caribbean, or right here in the United States. The issues are essentially the same.
Wow. Heidi.
You know, Shaka, I have two things. What Joanna was talking about was so striking for me. Talk about all the places that women are not expected to be. That speaks to the mindset that we still have today. And I think those are some of the things we have to really take a close look at every time we have the opportunity to observe International Women's Day. She was talking in the law class that you think in a classroom where you are studying the law in this day and age in the United States of America, it is still a shock to see a woman of color, a woman from Africa. You know, that speaks to, we don't expect women to be in these places. And I think that is something that needs to change globally. But when she spoke about race, now, this is really like my wheelhouse.
Right.
I grew up under the system of apartheid, where as a young girl growing up, it is all about what you see growing up. Everywhere I looked, it was all the places that were told, that where I was told, you don't belong, you shall not come, you will not be. You will not see success because of the color of your skin. I mean, you are taught from a very young age to understand that your place in society. So even for women, I think no matter what we want to reach in life, it is not just about equality and that it ends there. Our goal isn't just to reach equality. I mean, I think in many places, and the poorer you are, the harder it is for you. And I grew up in that kind of poverty where you still have to fight for justice first.
So what about the issue of class?
You see, it's all these, it's about layers. And every single time you think you have done away with one layer, there is another one that waits for you. Once we've done away with the race layer and you think you have achieved something, you know, in changing your status, then there is class. We talk about access to education, access to quality education.
Yes.
That is always a challenge.
That is critical, not just access to education, quality education.
Education. And
there's
access to jobs. Mm-hmm.
What is the difference? What is the difference between education and quality education?
Well, there's education under a tree so that people can say, hey, they're in school. But a quality education that sets you up for the next level mm-hmm. of education, beyond just literacy. We want more girls in areas of STEM, what we say STEMinists, mm-hmm. right? We want more girls interested in STEM. But I feel there's a disconnect in what is available. For instance, I'm from South Africa. We're always told there are these amazing programs available.
You're from a free South Africa.
A free South Africa, the new South Africa. And that there are all these amazing programs available. I remember when I was a student, I went and knocked on a door and asked if I could get a scholarship. I wasn't a straight A student mm-hmm. and I didn't have money to finish journalism school or mm-hmm. even go to my second year.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a scholarship because I was previously disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the gentleman in the bursary's office, why and I could only get it for 1 year, but why do you not tell us? He says, well, you didn't ask. I'm like, I wouldn't even have known where to go. And I think that's a problem. We don't tell our young people what is available to them. We don't go to the schools and tell them, these are your options in life. You can become a lawyer. You can become an entrepreneur. And here is the path that you can take to get there. Bring in some role models.
Mm-hmm.
Let kids speak to architects. Mm-hmm. Let kids, women, young girls speak to engineers and see what they had to overcome so that they can mm-hmm. start imagining themselves as that one mm-hmm. day. So I think it's also a quality education and what we teach young girls and boys about what their possibilities are in life. And that's so even more important for girls. But I think a quality education also that sets young women up for success in tertiary education, in secondary education, in tertiary education, and then sets them up for success in the job market, mm-hmm. and making sure that they have the appropriate skills and that they have the skills that meet what businesses want. Mm-hmm. I think it just has to be a national strategic, you know, priority. Mm-hmm. If we can do this, if we want to, if we really have the will, I think we can accomplish this.
Yeah, back to what my colleague said in terms of quality education, when I was working in Africa, and I think I've shared this with you earlier, I've done significant studies on child marriage in Southern Africa. In particular, I've looked to see what kind of mechanisms that NGOs throughout the Southern African region have in place in order to combat against child marriage. Mm. And one of the things that I found is that as a result of these young girls being pushed into marriage, oftentimes education is no longer a topic of discussion, right? So if we want to have a better society in Africa, it is in the best interest of various countries and various societies to invest in the education of the girl child.
Or to have education perhaps as a right as opposed to being a privilege.
Exactly. And earlier we talked about quality education, right? Because like, for example, in the United States, right? Every child has access to attend school, right? But when you start looking at the quality of education which different children receive, you realize there is a disparity, right? And your zip code will ultimately determine your quality of education. And I think that is a huge problem because we are setting these kids up for failure, not success. We're telling them, hey, you know, this is what you need to learn, right, to graduate and mm-hmm. become successful. Mm-hmm. And then when you send them off to college, they can't even perform, right? And I know we are talking about the continent, but some of the issues impacting us in the United States also impact Correct. Folks in Africa. So, and I always say this to my friends, whether you're in Africa or in the Caribbean or in the U.S., we're all fighting for the same thing. That is to have a better life and to ensure that our kids have better quality education and access to resources so that they can become productive members of society.
And Shaka, in South Africa under apartheid, we called it gutter education.
Gutter education.
Gutter education versus what we understood to be a white quality education back then. And of course, we now have a taste. We can now have access to a greater education. But then, as you mentioned, then class starts to play a role. So it's an uphill climb.
Heidi, when you were growing up in apartheid South Africa, and you grew up around beautiful Cape Town.
Yes.
But you couldn't actually enjoy Cape Town. Did it feel like there was an American intellectual writer mm-hmm. by the name of Edison, and he wrote this classic book called The Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you could relate with that character?
Shaka, I grew up in beautiful Cape Town, but I grew up on the other side of the mountain. Cape Town is divided, and you've been in Cape Town, you understand yes. what it is like. Mm-hmm. There is the part that we love to show the world, and there is the part where we allow our children to grow up in squalor. I grew up, to put it very frankly, I grew up in the ghetto in Cape Town. I grew up around a lot of violence. I grew up around a lot of child abuse, a lot of sex abuse, a lot of substance abuse. And I saw women like my mother trapped in a constant cycle of desperation and of poverty. And I grew up in that kind of poverty. And I can tell you, you are invisible. And there aren't enough people telling your story. And when you see your story, the only story you see are not the success stories coming out of your community. You see the drunk people coming out of your community, because those are the people they love to put on television. Those are the people they love to laugh at. When you see any black person, for the longest time in my life, it was always in terms of either a very backward and, a very backward image of people. We're never showing black people in classrooms as lecturers. And I think that was something that was so missing in our education. We didn't learn about our African heroes. We didn't learn about the rest of the continent. And I really felt that my education let me down so much. But Because my parents were economic migrants, I got an opportunity to live in Namibia for a few years.
You told me.
And that is where I, by accident, ended up at a private school.
But Namibia was also under apartheid South Africa.
Yes, but the laws were relaxed in Namibia. So we didn't have to live in the projects. My brother went to boarding school because a uranium mine had said all your only qualification you need was to be above average. And he was certainly just above average. But, you know, that he could have, we had never heard of this. Oh, my goodness, we can, your skin color is not going to count against you. And so for a few years, I learned what is possible. I was treated equally, at least in my mind, how I experienced it at the age of, you know, 7, 8, and 9. But those were my formative years. And those years stood me in such good stead because I came back to Cape Town at the height of the riots under apartheid. And I had the understanding that this doesn't have to be my life. This is not how the world should be. The world should be in a place where I can also have access to a good education. And my dream is that for so many young kids in Cape Town, where I was from, in the whole of South Africa, every child deserves that. And every young girl deserves that. And we're going to pay the price if we don't give our kids that. Our economy will suffer. And we're already seeing signs of that, where we have a tremendous skill shortage. And I think a huge answer to that, women. Today in South Africa, the national unemployment rate is around 27%. But the unemployment rate amongst women in the country is 29%. That's above the country's unemployment rate. And we have more women in the country than we have men. And so that speaks to, when we talk about education, we also need to look at the issue of high unemployment rates amongst women. I don't see how our economy can ever even dream of prospering if we are not going to give women the good quality jobs and train them for it.
Heidi, what about studies which indicate that in apartheid South Africa, if you had a lighter shade like you do, that you somehow, just somehow, you were slightly better off than those with darker shades like Ndugu Shaka?
Shaka, that's a very real thing that I think a lot of people don't want to talk about in South Africa. I am colored, which is I am of mixed race. It is not as a derogatory word as it maybe is here in the United States. So I would be identified as either other or colored on paper, on forms, you know,
they
or
call
university
it in,
and going to the doctor.
They call it in Europe, like in France, mulatto.
Mulatto, yes, which I actually, a term I learned very late in my life.
The
but anyway,
Portuguese,
I just understood colored.
The Portuguese call it mestizo.
Mestizo, correct. That one I was familiar
in
with.
In Haiti, too, we call it mulatto as well.
And in East Africa, they call it chotara.
Ah, all right. So I am all those things. I am a total mutt. But Shaka, this is true, that under apartheid, this was the messaging to different race groups. The colored people were told, you're better than black people. You're
divide,
not as good as,
divide
good as white
rule.
People,
yeah.
But you're a little bit. And that is how they were able to
divide.
And conquer people. And that was very real.
Very interesting.
We were not treated as, I mean, we obviously experienced race, and especially the area of South Africa where I come from, colored people are in the majority in that area. So for a long time, it was kind of all I knew, my frame of reference. Also, the social problems are different. We have a lot of alcoholism because it's rooted in slavery in that part of the country. But I also grew up seeing that black people in South Africa were far more vocal and were far more defiant against apartheid than perhaps colored people were. Now, of course, there were a lot of colored people who were involved in the struggle, people who ended up being like our finance minister, Trevor Manuel. We saw a lot of people in that. Because South Africa is so mixed. I mean, you know, almost everyone is colored at the end of the day.
You know, the Bishop Bozak that used to
Alan
admire
Busak,
so much.
And those, right, those were people that really defied that notion that we are better than them, but that we are all one and we are all being oppressed under the same system. Mm. But Shaka, that messaging that was sent to people is very much still a problem today in colored society. I do think that there are people who come from the neighborhoods where I come from who do think that they are better than black people. And people can deny it or not. I have enough life experience to know that that does exist.
Mm. Very interesting.
But it is there and it was effective.
How do
it
you think, how do you suggest that they could perhaps figure out a way of overcoming that? What can they do to overcome that?
like with many things, it is about education and knowing someone else. Also, you know what
quality
else is changing?
Education.
Intermarriage is changing
and,
a lot.
And what about social
migration too?
What about social political consciousness?
Yes, and that is rooted in what we learn in school. What we learned in school was Jan van Riebeek came to the Cape in 1652 to set up a refreshment station.
Yes.
We didn't learn about Nelson Mandela. We didn't learn about Winnie Madikizela Mandela as being some of our heroes. We didn't learn those things. And so that was just not part of the curriculum. But I do know who Simon van der Stel was and all these Dutchmen who came and they erected all these statues to them. But Shaka, coming back to what you were saying, that was a very real problem. And to this day, it is still. You've been to Cape Town. You cannot stay in Cape Town for longer in the month and not feel that and not know that that it exists. So yes, that is very, very much an issue. And skin color is a very dangerous issue in where I am from, because even within my society, it is about better treatment. We treat each other better based on the shades of our skin.
I see.
And I think that goes to mindset again.
Mindset.
Right.
Attitudes.
Changing mindset. And again, education changes that. And as we start ridding ourselves of these little segregated neighborhoods that were set up during apartheid, I think as more people, urbanization is changing a lot of that, because people
exposure.
Are forced to live together.
Yeah.
And when you start seeing a new black middle class, that also changes that, because people all become part of a middle class. Mm. Neighborhoods are much more integrated. So I think it is something that could possibly just correct itself over time, but it needs to be backed up with education and more political. And I wish politicians wouldn't exploit those differences.
So basically, you need really fundamental changes in men's and women's attitudes and mindsets.
Yeah,
do you agree?
And I always say this, I don't think that laws are sufficient to change
Correct.
The issues impacting women, right? Because there are certain laws throughout the continent of Africa to protect women, right? But then you have the issue of customary law versus the Constitution, right? That's usually a huge discussion, right? However, what I will say is laws are good, but laws alone are not sufficient to change the landscape of society and to truly address some of the issues impacting women and girls throughout the continent. The minds of people, men and women, must change. You change the mindset, you'll see more changes. Versus having just the law by itself. It's just not sufficient.
So you cannot simply legislate behavior, really?
You can't. It's not sufficient.
And a certain behavior has to be modeled by the country's leaders.
The leaders.
We need to. I always believe everything, and maybe it's because I work in television, but I believe in optics and what people see. And what people see. When we ask for justice, we need to see more images of people getting justice, and that is an indication that the law is working. Mm-hmm. Because laws, we always brag, right? In Africa, even in South Africa, we have these amazing laws, we have a great constitution, and sometimes the constitution is more liberal than the country actually is. But
when the laws are not implemented,
when
they're
not
when the laws have no teeth.
When they have no teeth and there's no money to back
there's
it
no
up.
Mechanism.
Or they have teeth, but they can't bite.
Correct.
That's another aspect as well.
Really?
Definitely.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, so please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about, sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower, and change the rules. It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
Well, let me ask you this question, Heidi. You've seen it all. You've been around apartheid. You've been around post-apartheid freedom and all kind of stuff. You talked about the need for leadership, for leaders. When you look around in South Africa, do you feel like you are looking at leaders or you're looking at rulers?
You know, I haven't looked around in South Africa in a while because, you know, on our show, we kind of have a very pan-African view of things. But
you keep in touch.
I do. And I think we're going through a phase where look, Shaka, I put it this way. I have been through a period where it feels like rulers. Mm-hmm. I think today we still have leaders. We don't have enough leaders. But I think South Africa, looking now from the outside in, I think South Africa has a president who wants to do the right thing.
Cyril Ramaphosa.
I think Cyril Ramaphosa, at the very heart of it, is he's a good man. I think he is a good man, but he is part of, you know, as in South Africa, it is the ANC that rules, as many say, until Jesus comes. I don't know about that, but there's, Jacob Zuma said that the ANC will rule until Jesus comes. But I think this is a time when exemplary leadership is needed.
I see.
But the politics of the country, and I think I look at Ethiopia sometimes, and I think it's an amazing, amazing story.
Abiy Ahmed.
And I can't help but think that was us.
Abiy Ahmed seems...
Not too long. 25 years ago, that was South Africa. Mm-hmm. It was the darling of the continent. We were going through this exciting, exciting period.
Would you agree
suddenly...
Would you agree with some people who are actually saying that when you talk about Ethiopia, you talk about the individual... Mm-hmm. Abiy Ahmed, Prime Minister, that he could probably be a new breed of African leaders.
I hope so. I hope so. But I also believe that there's a honeymoon period and that the hardest work still lies ahead. I don't know if you've ever heard that they say the first 40 years of marriage is the hardest. After that, it's plain sailing.
Okay.
Right. So I think as we have discovered, that this change is not immediate. It doesn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in our case, like the hardest, once you have arrived at this new dawn of a new era, that's when the hard work starts.
Thank you.
And I think that there's something happening throughout the continent that we didn't discuss. Mm. There's a shift taking place. As we saw how the people wanted His Excellency Zuma gone, right? And the ANC made that happen, right? So I think the voice of the people are being heard throughout the continent. You look at His Excellency Mugabe in
Zimbabwe,
right? And how the people wanted him gone, and ultimately he was out of office. Mm-hmm. So I think that
Yahya Jammeh in the Gambia.
Exactly. So I think there's something happening throughout the continent of Africa, and I am very hopeful and optimistic for a better Africa, and even more hopeful because of what's happening in Rwanda right now in terms of women serving in parliament. I think Rwanda has the most number of women serving in parliament all across the continent, right?
But they're appointed.
Yes, they're appointed,
and
right?
And therefore, when you think about it, who do they owe allegiance to? Is it the appointing authority or is it their constituents?
Well, you know, we have to start somewhere, right? The systems are not perfect, right? We have to start somewhere. The fact that little girls can see a woman in positions of power in the parliament in Rwanda, right? That says something to a little girl. Maybe I can become a member of parliament as well. So representation does make a difference. Right. So I'm very hopeful politically about what is happening throughout the continent.
But what about the fact that when it comes to the real deal, not long time ago, you had two very prominent Rwandan politician women who were trying to essentially run for president. They ended up being locked up in prison.
Yes, yes. I did read about those instances, and those are issues that we have to address.
Diana Rwigara?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Victoria Ingabire?
Absolutely. We have to address those concerns because we want more women in positions of power, because if there's more women representation, there will be more policies, right, that would impact women to ensure that gender equality is a thing. Right?
Is it perhaps more significant to have... these symbols.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As opposed to how they actually get there.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But at the same token, sometimes these systems are not perfect, right? They're not perfect. But I think we have to start somewhere, right? I would prefer that symbols are not sufficient. I want someone in position that will actually execute on behalf of the people, right?
Right.
That's what I would prefer. But
right.
I do understand systems are not perfect. We have to start somewhere, right? And the fact that we're even having this discussion about women in leadership
right.
throughout the continent is a first start.
You know, earlier when you talked about quality education,
mm-hmm.
you reminded me of a great author,
mm-hmm.
Alex Haley,
mm-hmm.
a man who obviously is known for the classic Roots.
Mm.
But most people don't know that he was the man who actually wrote the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Pan-Africanist Malcolm X,
Detroit
right?
Detroit Red,
yeah. mm-hmm.
the man that used to put on the Zoot suit.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when he was in high school in Detroit, mm-hmm. he dared dream about becoming a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But he was told simply because of his race,
mm-hmm.
of who he was,
mm-hmm.
that he should be thinking perhaps about an occupation that he could do with his hands.
Let me share a story with you. So I remember I came from very humble beginnings. I'm the first one in my family to have gone to law school and do some of the things that I'm doing currently. I remember I was a waitress at a restaurant, and I told one of our customers, we were just discussing about, you know, what my plans are, and I said, I want to go to law school. You know, mm-hmm. happily I told this man that. And he said, it's a very hard profession, you know. You should consider something else, right?
Really?
And I'll never forget that. And yes, it is hard, right? And I always tell young people, and I know the reason why he said that to me, right? It's because I'm a woman. I'm a black woman on top of it, right? And I'm working as a waitress. So how dare her to dream of,
right.
of such type of education, right? But on as we're celebrating Women's Day, right, I want to remind women that whatever you want to accomplish, it's possible.
You can do it.
You can do it. You just got to have hope, right? And I say hope because the minute you lose hope, you lose everything. Because it is hope that sustains us in the midst of failures and adversities. You are going to run into adversities.
Are you sure that someone might not think in the audience that I have perhaps bribed you? Because I actually keep talking about how we must keep hope alive.
We must. It's
Without
important.
Hope, you are simply as deep as 6 feet.
Exactly. Hope is so critical. Because, again, it is hope that sustains us in the midst of adversity. Because there's a little girl somewhere in Africa, right here in the United States, who's being raped, who's being molested, and who has lost all hope, who has lost her confidence. Or there's a woman who has gone through all those different injustices, right? And they've lost our hope. And I want to remind them that never lose hope and keep believing in yourself in spite of.
I believe you really because you are looking at a guy here
mm-hmm.
who was born and grew up in a very little southwestern Ugandan town mm-hmm. of Kabale.
Mm-hmm.
And I dared dream to become a journalist.
Wow.
In fact, a journalist of international repute.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine in Kampala looked at me and said, wait a minute, what the hell are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You should think about something else. There's no way you're going to be a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that he's watching me as I talk.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is.
So what have you been able to do with the education you have had?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the quality education you have had,
mm-hmm.
the legal training that you have had,
mm-hmm.
What have you been able to do with those two very important assets to make a difference among people who look like you, your gender?
Exactly. So for me, as I said earlier, my area of expertise is national security, foreign affairs, counterterrorism, and intelligence. That's my specialty, right? However, I always tell people this, no matter what I end up doing in life, I would always be the voice of women and girls because I understand how important it is for a young girl to see a woman who looks like herself. Because by seeing that, it tells you something. Maybe I can do it too, right? And the fact that you, Shaka, have both of us here on this show and viewers are watching, mm-hmm. a little girl can say, maybe I can be on Shaka's show too, because there are two women here today.
And so, maybe I can be like Joanne.
Correct.
Right. So for me, or better than Joanna, right? Better than Joanna, in fact.
Would you, for example, find it comfortable mm-hmm. Giving your shoulders mm-hmm. to some women to stand on those shoulders so that they could probably see a little bit farther than you?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, as women in positions of power, we have a duty, not just something that we should talk about. We have a duty to create systems and sometimes even policies to ensure more women are at the table where we are, because we shouldn't be the only ones, right? Because the more of us that are a part of the decision-making process, correct. The better it is for the woman, not only the woman, but society as a whole. Right? Because when you oppress and suppress women, it doesn't do anything for your society. If anything, it creates an economical impact for your country. Right?
Who inspired you? I mean, how could you come up with this business of having the audacity mm-hmm. to be a lawyer?
Well, growing up, I'm from the Republic of Haiti, as I told you guys earlier.
And we should perhaps point out, for those who may not know, mm-hmm. that Haiti was the first independent republic in the Western Hemisphere, 1804.
In the world,
1804.
1804. Wow.
And the first black republic mm-hmm. at that.
And let me add to that, Shaka. You know, what people don't understand or know is that the revolution, right, was not merely about us liberating ourselves from the oppression of France. It was about liberating black people all over the world. Mm. So in 1805, a year after we gained our independence, we amended our constitution to make it such that anybody black who were to step foot on Haiti soil would be considered free. One.
Wow.
Two, a white man could not own land in my country, nor be a slave master. So in essence, those types of laws severely undermine white supremacy. So how dare you, as a black country, you not only gain your independence, but you're trying to liberate other black folks all over the world, right? Because as we know, slavery and colonialism right. have always been about economic
gain. Slavery, Jim Crow was across that, was
right?
across, yeah.
So you severely undermine the whole agenda. So a lot of countries did not even recognize our independence, including the United States, obviously France, right, and other countries. So if you have a country from its inception is not recognized by other states, that means you cannot trade, right? So economically, we were placed in a position where we would not, we will suffer. Exactly. So in order to understand Haiti currently, you have to go back to 1804. If you understand what happened in 1804, then you will understand everything else.
Is that the reason, by the way, why I was looking at your email and somehow the figures 1804 appear somewhere?
Yes, indeed. It's a number that I'm very proud of. It's a year, rather, that I'm very proud of. But back to what you asked me earlier, how did I dare to become who I am today? Growing up in Haiti, and I think it's the same for most Africans, is you either become a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer. You choose one of them, right? Whether they have the system in place to assist you, mm-hmm. yes, in accomplishing those goals, but those are your options.
There was a Nigerian mm-hmm. comedian who once said, if you come from a Nigerian family, you know you have four options in life.
Yes.
Doctor, lawyer, engineer, or disgrace to the family. That is...
talking about that, you know, when we were watching the clip, the package really mm-hmm. by Paul Rondiho, mm-hmm. There was a Nigerian lady who said that for women, you were supposed to be seen, but not heard. You experienced that?
Or heard and not seen. I mean, it was, you could just never
seen,
win.
Not
women
hard.
Have been the silent backbones of African economies mm-hmm. since the beginning of time. Mm-hmm.
They are basically major producers, but do mm-hmm. not, you know, do not control mm-hmm. the products.
And I believe firmly that every problem we have on the continent, you can trace back to the low status mm-hmm. and the treatment of women mm-hmm. on the continent. Mm-hmm. If you really take a look at it, and that I think we are paying the price every day mm-hmm. for not having women at peace negotiations, not mm-hmm. having women at that table, not having enough women as captains of mm-hmm. industry, not having enough women teaching children science.
We need a lot of women actually involved in conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And if we even going back to Rwanda, mm-hmm. we can look at positions that are symbolic and where mm-hmm. people's allegiances mm-hmm. are. Just because there is a woman in a particular position, in my view, doesn't always mean that, you know, just because of women doesn't mean we have the right women there. So I would advise against just putting women there as a symbol, but there are enough qualified, educated women for us to choose from and to choose in these positions. But
encourage,
I believe it is...
Encourage an environment that is inclusive.
Mm-hmm. And Shaka, I think what we at least see in Rwanda is a reflection of the demographics of the country. Mm-hmm. And for me, especially coming from South Africa, we always have a very huge focus on the demographics of the country, what mm-hmm. we see on television, what we see in our news reports. So I think also in our parliamentary representation, mm-hmm. I believe that it should be reflective of the demographics of the country. If there are more women in the country, mm-hmm. I would expect there would be more women in parliament, absolutely. More women crafting the mm-hmm. legislation. But so I think, unless we start elevating the status of women, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and if the status of women does not change in our countries, I don't know how we think we will see peace. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we think we will ever see our continent prosper mm-hmm. unless we do right by the women of our continent.
Tell us something about your popular program, Voices.
Chuck, I really like that you say it's popular. It really elevates the status of our show.
Yeah.
You know, Shaka, this was an idea that was birthed by Deirdre Murray McIntosh, who works here at VOH as a producer. You're very familiar with her. And this show first launched in December last year. It is called Our Voices, and it is actually VOA's first Pan-African women's talk show.
Our Voices.
Thank you.
Meaning
our voices, and what we're saying, not just the voices of the four hosts, but we want to be representative of the voices of the continent. And I think we're trying to really do that by having four hosts from different regions of the continent.
Right.
So I am, of course, from South Africa. I grew up in both South Africa and Namibia. So I got Southern Africa a little bit covered in that sense. And
then someone told me, in fact, that they watched it in Kingston, Jamaica.
Oh, that is wonderful. Okay, so now there's pressure for us to add a fifth.
Technology.
That's a pressure for us to add a fifth host now, maybe, so that we can also represent the islands, can we not? But we have Ayen Bior. She is a daughter of East Africa. She's South Sudanese. She was born in Ethiopia. She grew up in Kenya. So really, we have someone who represents East Africa. We have Oriane Itangishaka. She is from Burundi. And that's her on the screen right now. And then we also have Hadiza Kiari, who hails from northern Nigeria. So with this, I think we are well-placed to not just report about pressing issues, I think, but also we're well-placed to talk about our personal experiences and our professional experiences as well. And I think we're well-placed to bring a different narrative mm-hmm. about the continent.
Are you drawing traction so far? How are you being received by the audience?
I think we got a little bit of a taste of how we're being received. Look, we're very young. And I think even being on the show today, talking about the show, we're hoping, you know, to get really build an inclusive audience, because this is a women's talk show, but we also do want to bring men to the conversation. Mm-hmm. If men feel there is nothing for them mm-hmm. as men, we're hoping there would be something for them as fathers, as brothers, as sons, as leaders. So they are vital to the conversation. Just as we say women are vital to the conversation, we need men to on board as allies, men to mm-hmm. champion women's rights as well. So we're not only talking about women's issues, we're talking about all issues on the continent, because all issues affect mm-hmm. women. I don't
for
believe
example,
in just women's issues. All issues are women's
for
issues.
For example, what are some of the important issues that you talked about?
Right, so far we've had some really interesting shows about, we started out with an episode on women in political leadership with focus on what was happening in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. So we tried to be very current and use news events as a newspaper.
The first female Ethiopian president.
And we discussed also, you know, the importance of having more women, but why in the whole of Africa right now do we have one president? That just gives us, and someone who is in sort of a ceremonial position. So
as
we
a matter
discussed,
of fact, it is not one female president. The last time I checked, the president of Mauritius is a woman.
Mm-hmm. And
a professor.
Yes. At the time
with a PhD.
At the time that we were doing this, we were talking about, you know, about Werke Zauder. And we were talking about whether what we need are ceremonial posts. And also, we have had many women presidents and prime ministers. Mm. But what impact have they really made?
Right.
Because beyond just having women in positions of power, we need effective women. Yeah. We need effective leadership. Are women's lives better off because they have, with they see women at the top? And that is something that is also on us as women.
But I thought we agreed earlier that symbols are very significant.
We need effective symbols as well.
Correct.
You cannot just be there and therefore you are, but we need women of action. And that is a matter of urgency, because I don't think we have a lot of time to waste on the ceremonial posts and playing politics. We need women who can come in and get the job done, and we need effective women who are qualified to be in those posts. It speaks well of us and it speaks well about our countries. But Chuck, I want to tell you, we also spoke about, this was one of my favorite shows, we spoke about being black in America. And we really talked about, you would have been great to come and talk to us on that, because you were touching on some of those issues. You know, we talked about the contributions of Africans to the United States, and we did this around the birthday of Martin Luther, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And we talked about the contributions of Africans from the time of slavery to the contributions today. And so beyond just, you know, having African Americans, but there's a there's been for a while now a new generation of Africans who are from the continent who are contributing to, you know, to this economy, and we're contributing to economies around the world. And I think that was probably one of my favorite shows. We also had a show about women in the military, which I think was, you know, it was very, that was a very exciting show because
women generals.
Women generals and how militaries, you know, have changed and have been changing. And we had Salem Solomon, who's on the screen now. She was in the Eritrean military, and it was fantastic to have one of our own come on and speak about her experiences. But, you know, we addressed the question about whether women should change or whether militaries should change. And, you know, we addressed the fact that do militaries change? I believe they do, because they have had to change to integrate for reasons of race. Militaries have had to change to integrate people based on tribe.
Gender.
Why not change
just like police,
to integrate
just like
women properly?
Police forces.
Right. And what should be the norm inside a military? That all women should now try and be like men?
You
know, we discussed whether be women and admire and acknowledge the strength, celebrate the strength of women as women in the military.
And
recognize
officers.
What they bring to the table.
Precisely.
Recognize what they bring and how they make the environment better. But we also spoke, we also talk about really hard subjects.
They do not lower standards at all. In fact, they add value.
They add value. And women have been part of, like, you know, movements. For instance, in South Africa, Mkhonto we sees where women have been like guerrilla fighters since the beginning of time.
Historically, this even when you went to
nothing in
West
the world
Africa,
is new.
The great Amazon Brigade.
Correct. Nothing we see today is new. It's just because we've happened upon it now and we're making it an issue does not mean that women have not been contributing and have not been change makers since, you know, before we can even remember.
But what about women in the audience? How have they responded? Because I have been very disappointed that sometimes we actually do some editions looking at women issues and we are an international call-in talk show, we hardly can actually get questions from women audience.
I think sometimes it is the starting point where there is a problem. Sometimes we are trying to self-correct or we're trying to correct a pattern. And I think what this show does is we're trying to say we are shifting the gears and we are targeting women as a primary target audience. We are targeting women and we're inviting women to be part of the conversation. Therefore, mm-hmm. I will go on 1,000 shows. I will go and shout it from the hilltops wherever I need to go right. on the continent to say, this is available. This is here. There is a platform for our views mm-hmm. to be heard.
Could you please look in the camera and on our behalf, appeal to our sisters, our mothers, our aunts, our grandmoms to watch us, to participate in
I
our programs.
I would be happy to do that. I think I am on camera too. I would like to say to the women all across the continent, this is a show where your voice can be heard. I mean, we are four hosts from four different parts of the continent. We can speak about our professional experience. We can be representative of the issues that affect women. But at the end of the day, we would like your issues to come to the fore. And we would like your issues to be discussed on our show. We cannot do that if you don't tell us what you would like to see. So we invite you to watch the show. I think this is a groundbreaking effort on the part of the Voice of America. And I think that it is in the best interest of all our mothers, of all our daughters, of mm-hmm. our sisters, of our cousins, to tune in and watch this. You know, it is not every day that we do get a platform like this to talk about. And whatever you want to talk about, tell us. We are happy to give that a platform, and we would also hope that you can learn from the people we bring on to the show, from the stories that we tell. We really are making a concerted effort to tell really in-depth stories and kind of bring you news that you haven't heard before. But we are going to be covering very difficult subjects sometimes, taboo topics, harmful traditions. We are going to talk about rape and sexual violence. These are not always things people want to talk about, but these are important issues, and we need your voice to be part of that conversation. So I hope you will join us. Our show is called Our Voices. We're a weekly show, and you can watch it on the same programmatic platform where you get all of VOA's other programs, and we really hope that you are going to become part of the Our Voices family and part of our audience. We would love to hear from you.
And Heidi, I can assure them from the deepest, better part of the bottom of my Kavale heart and soul that Our Voices and Straight Talk Africa and other VOA platforms have a reputation for being media and environmentally friendly. Well, Joanne, mm-hmm. you finally are here, you see? You are finally here.
I'm finally here, yes.
You're living your dream.
Dreams do come true.
Yes.
So it's an honor. And as we're wrapping up, you know, I've shared with you that I am an internationalist, right? And I've worked throughout the continent of Africa on issues ranging from child marriage to electoral
right.
reforms.
Right.
And what I can tell you is that the women, they're paying attention and they are fighting for their rights. Because I saw women in South Africa, women in the Kingdom of Eswatini, women in Malawi, Zambia, Ghana, you name it. They are fighting for their rights. They know what the issues are.
What about the simple thing, land? Why should land really not automatically be inherited by an African woman? Those things should change.
They should change. We have a
lot. Unfortunately, time happens not to be our ally. And on that note, our distinguished guests are Joanna LeBlanc and VOA's Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick, my colleague, of course. And thanks to our audience for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, African women. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.